William makes a night of it. William had disliked Mr. Bennison from the moment he appeared. Mr. Bennison was a bachelor and wrote books on the training of children. He believed that their innocent curiosity should always be promptly satisfied. He believed that children trailed clouds of glory. He knew very few. He certainly did not know William. Mr. Bennison had met Ethel, William's sister, while she was staying with an aunt. Although Mr. Bennison had reached the mature age of 40 without having found any passion to supersede his passion for educational theories, he experienced a distinct quickening of the heart at the sight of Ethel with her forget-me-not eyes and copper locks. William could never understand what men saw in Ethel. However, he had more important things on his mind at present. Tops. It was Ginger, William's boon companion, who had seen the tops in the shop window and realised suddenly that the top season was upon them once more. The next day, almost all the youth of the village were equipped with tops. Only William and Ginger seemed topless. To William, a born leader, the position was intolerable. It was Wednesday. The thought of waiting till Saturday for his pocket money was not for one moment to be entertained. Money must somehow or other be raised in the interval. Tops of a kind could be bought for sixpence, but the really superior tops, the tops which befitted the age and dignity of William and Ginger, cost 1 shilling, and William and Ginger, never daunted by difficulties, determined to raise the sum by the next day. "We must get 1 shilling each," said William, with his expression of grim and fixed determination, "and we'll buy 'em tomorrow." William had spoken confidently, but he felt far from confident. He knew by experience the difficulty of extorting money from his family. He entered the drawing-room, and it was then that he first saw Mr. Bennison. It was then that he took a violent dislike to Mr. Bennison. Yet he had a wild hope that he might be a profitable source of tips. With a mental vision of the tops before his eyes, he assumed an expression of virtue and innocence.
"So this," said Mr. Bennison, with a genial smile, "this is the little brother."
William's expression of virtue melted into a scowl. The visitor then perpetrated the supreme mistake of laying his hand upon William's tousled head.
"Will is the name, is it not? Willie, for short, I presume?"
Mrs. Brown, noting fearfully the expression on her son's face, interposed. "We call him William," she said rather hastily. Mr. Bennison laboured under the delusion that he got on with children.
"Well, I've brought a present for Willie for short," he went on humorously.
William's heart rose, but Mr. Bennison took a book out of his pocket and handed it to William. The book was called A Child's Encyclopedia of Knowledge. Mrs. Brown, who could see William's face, went rather pale.
"Say thank you, William dear," she said nervously.
Then, hastily covering William's murmured thanks,
"Oh, how very kind of you, Mr. Bennison. How very kind. He'll be most interested. I'm sure he will, won't you, William dear? I'm sure he will."
William freed himself from Mr. Bennison's hand and went towards the door.
"You will remember," went on Mr. Bennison pleasantly, "that in my early training of the young, I lay down the rule that every present given to a child should tend to his or her mental development. I expect you'll remember that in my parents' help, I said..."
William crept quietly from the room. He went, first of all, to Ethel's bedroom. She was reading a novel in an armchair.
"Go away," she said to William.
"Ethel," he said, in a tone of brotherly sweetness, I wonder if you'd care to lend me 1 shilling, just to my next pocket money."
"Go away."
William looked at her coldly. "How can people say you're attractive?" he said. "Well, all I can say is wait till they know you. And that man downstairs coming just 'cause of you and worrying folks' lives out and stroking their heads and giving them books. Well, you'd think he'd be ashamed. And you'd think you'd be ashamed too."
Ethel had flushed.
"You needn't think I want him," she said. "I have to stay up here all the afternoon just because I can't bear the nonsense he talks when I'm down." "How long's he staying?" said William.
"A week," said Ethel viciously. "He said he was motoring in the neighbourhood and Mother asked him to stay a week. She likes him. He's got 3 cars and a lot of money and he can talk the hind leg off a donkey. All I can say is I'm going to have a nice week."
"What about 1 shilling?" said William, returning to the more important subject.
"Go away."
"I don't call you very generous, Ethel," said William loftily.
"No, and I'm not likely to be generous or feel generous with that man in the house," said Ethel.
William was silent for quite a long time. "Suppose," he said at last, "suppose he went tomorrow.
Would you feel generous then?
I would, said Ethel recklessly. I'd feel it quite up to 2 shillings in that case. But he won't go.
William walked very slowly downstairs. His brow was knit in thought. Mr. Bennison was still talking to Mrs. Brown in the drawing-room.
Oh, yes, I've laid stress on that in all my books. The child's curiosity must always be appeased. If a child came to me in the middle of the night for knowledge...
He laughed uproariously at his joke.
I trust I should give it to the best of my ability. Ah, here is our little Willie for short.
Still holding his child's encyclopedia of knowledge, William turned and quickly left the room. Mr. Bennison had had a good dinner and a pleasant talk with Ethel before he went to bed. He wrote a chapter of his new book, heading it Common Mistakes in the Treatment of Children. He laid down his favourite rule, a child's curiosity must be immediately satisfied when and where it appears, irrespective of inconvenience to the adult. Then he got into bed. He was just drifting blissfully into a dreamless sleep when the door opened and William, clad in pyjamas and carrying the child's encyclopedia of knowledge, appeared.
Excuse me disturbing you, said William politely, but it says in this book what you kindly gave me, something about Socrates, and I thought perhaps you wouldn't mind explaining to me what they are. I don't know what Socrates are.
Mr. Bennison was, on the whole, rather pleased. He was glad of an opportunity of living up to his ideals. He dragged his mind back from the rosy mists of sleep and endeavoured to satisfy William's thirst for knowledge. He talked long and earnestly about Socrates, his life and teaching, and his place in history. William listened with an expressionless face. Whenever the other seemed inclined to draw his remarks to a close, William would gently interpose a question, which would set his eloquence going again at a full flow. Eventually, Mr. Bennison's eloquence began to languish. He looked at his watch. It was 12:30.
I think that's all, my boy, he said.
William, still clasping his book, went quietly from the room. Mr. Bennison turned over, and soon a delicious drowsiness began to steal over him. Going, going. William entered the room again, still carrying his child's encyclopedia of knowledge.
It says in this book what you kindly gave me, he said earnestly, all about compound interest, but I don't quite understand.
The earnestness of William's expression touched Mr. Bennison. By 1:30 he had talked about compound interest till he was hoarse.
I don't think there's anything else I can tell you, he said with an air of irritation which he vainly endeavoured to hide.
William, with the utmost docility, went out of the room. Mr. Bennison turned over and tried to go to sleep. It did not seem so easy this time. He tried to count sheep going through a stile, but they persisted in turning into the figures of a compound interest sum.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5...
The door opened, and William appeared with the open book once more in his hand.
In this book what you kindly gave me, it tells about the stars and the lion and that, and I can't find the lion from the window, though the stars are out. I wondered if you'd kindly let me look through yours.
Sheep and stile vanished abruptly. Mr. Bennison sat up in bed. He looked very weary as he stared at William, but he was doggedly determined to act up to his ideals.
I don't think you can see the lion from this side of the house, my boy. It must be right on the opposite side of the house.
Well, then we could see it from my window, said William brightly and guilelessly, if you'd kindly come and help me find it.
Mr. Bennison said nothing for a few seconds. He was counting 40 to himself. Then he followed William across the landing to his room. William was not content with the lion. He insisted on finding all the other constellations mentioned in the book. At 2:30, Mr. Bennison staggered back to his bedroom. He took out the chapter he had written early in the evening and crossed out the words, "A child's curiosity must be immediately satisfied when and where it appears, irrespective of inconvenience to the adult." Then he got into bed. Sleep at last.
Mr. Bennison, in this book what you kindly gave me, there's some kind of intelligence tests it calls them, and I can't do them. I wondered if you'd kindly help me.
Well, I won't. Go away,
roared Mr. Bennison, drawing the clothes over his head. William quietly went away. Now, Mr. Bennison was a conscientious man.
Left alone in the silence of the night, he was horrified at his own depravity. He had deliberately broken his own rule. He had been false to his ideals. A child had come to him for help in the middle of the night, and he had refused him. The child, moreover, might repeat the story. It might get about. After wrestling with his conscience for half an hour, he arose and sought William in his room. At 4 o'clock he was still trying to solve the intelligence tests for William. William stood by, wearing that expression that Mr. Bennison was beginning to dislike intensely. At 4:15, Mr. Bennison, looking wild and dishevelled, returned to his room. But he was a broken man. He struggled no longer against his fate. 5 o'clock found him explaining to William exactly why Charles I had been put to death. 6 o'clock found him trying to fathom the meaning of various words that occurred in the chapter on wireless. At 7 o'clock he felt really ill and went downstairs to try to find a whiskey and soda. He could not find a whiskey and soda. After upsetting a cruet in the sideboard cupboard, he went guiltily back to his bedroom. His bed looked tidier than he imagined he had left it, and very inviting. Perhaps he might just get half an hour's sleep before he got up. His feet met with an unexpected resistance halfway down the bed, bringing his knees sharp up to his chin. The bed was all wrong. For a few seconds Mr. Bennison forgot the traditions of self-restraint and moderation of language on which he had been reared. William, standing in the doorway, listened with interest. "Oh, I hope you don't mind me trying if I could do it," he said. "I don't know why it's called an apple pie bed, do you? It doesn't say nothing about it in this book what you kindly gave me." Mr. Bennison flung himself on William with a roar. William dodged lightly onto the landing. Mr. Bennison followed and collided heavily with a housemaid who was carrying a tray of early morning tea. William came down to breakfast. His mother was talking to his father. "He wouldn't even stay for breakfast," she was saying. "He said his letter called him back to town on most urgent business. I didn't like his manner at all."
"Oh?" said her husband from behind his paper, without much interest.
"No, I thought it rather ungracious, and he looked wild and hollow-eyed and that sort of thing. I wonder whether perhaps he takes drugs. One reads of such things, you know. I'm glad he's gone."
William went up to Ethel's bedroom. "He's gone, Ethel," he said. "He's gone for good. Now what about that 2 shillings? Ethel looked at him with sudden suspicion. Then she said carelessly, "All right, if he's really and truly gone, I'll give you 1/2 a crown.
William met Ginger at the end of the lane and with a flourish brought out his 1/2 a crown. "This'll do for both of us," he said with a lordly air.
"Crumbs," said Ginger. "Who'd you get that out of?"
"Well, if you think it was easy," began William.
Then he stopped. It was a long story and already retreating into the limbo of the past. The golden present included a breathless run into the village, a race down the village street and tops, glorious tops, superior shilling each tops with 6 pence over. He uttered his shrill, discordant war whoop. "Come on," he shouted, "for they're all sold out. Race you to the end of the road."